Welcome back to Nocturnal Journal on WGN 720. It's been a long time since we heard Perry Como. So we're going to try something here. We're going to do the first half hour on Sunrise, Sunrise Cafe, my favorite breakfast place in the city in Ukrainian Village. Then we're going to do the next half hour on Gibson Steakhouse, Sunset, over on the Rush Street neighborhood. So the first segment, we've got Marty Kam, the owner of the Sunrise Cafe. And we have my favorite server. I'm going to ask you about language there, Casey Curtis.
Good evening, Dave.
The other day I was walking in there. I go to this place a lot. I just, you've got a voice for radio, so we got to get you on the radio. But before we start, Marty, tell us a little about the history of the restaurant. I've been going there almost since you started. You opened in 2004?
Yeah, 2004, March 2004. So we've been open like 13 years now.
And I've been in that neighborhood for that period of time. You're East Ukrainian Village.
Yeah.
I'm a little west of you.
We're 2012 West Chicago, just west of Damon. And we started in 2004, because we were going to a restaurant that I think you know about, Uncle Mike's.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And we were
on
going
Grand
there.
Avenue, right?
And that's a great place. But we had this building, we had this vacant spot, and we thought, well, we could open something a little closer to where we live, and that's what we did.
And how has the neighborhood changed?
It's changed a lot, yeah, in the last 13 years. Well, in the last 25 years. We moved in that area about 1989, and when we first moved in, it was pretty rough. You hear gunshots all the time. And now they're building everywhere. There's condos going up all around the neighborhood. And but it's really, it's helped our business a lot. We're packed on the weekends, And
yeah, I stopped coming on weekends because you're so crowded. I mean, you're packed. Yeah. What are the hours there?
We're open 7 to 3 every day, and we have breakfast, lunch all day.
And before that, we've talked before about what was the Pavilion? You worked at the Pavilion, this Humboldt Park boarding house.
Oh, that's that was a place that my brother and I owned. It was a it was like a boarding house basically, but we also served meals, and it was mostly senior citizens, and we owned that back in like early 90s, and that was actually the basis for my book, Mr. Schumach's Boarding House.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. And we had that for about 3 or 4 years, and then my brother and I, we kind of like split up, and he took that, and then it ended up becoming condos like everything else.
And that was in Humboldt Park.
Yeah, that was right in the corner of Humboldt Boulevard and Palmer Square, right there.
And Sunrise became your first restaurant venture then?
Yeah.
Real quick on the book, you got some of your characters. Is the book still, I know you were selling it at the restaurant, but give us a quick cliff note thing on the book.
The book,
did the characters come from there?
Well, yeah, 3 or 4 characters were loosely based on some of the actual people that live there. And but the book, it was a boarding house set in Pennsylvania. It was about a widow that owned this prime real estate that some casino developer was trying to steal away, basically. So it was fiction, but that came out, what, like 06, something like that.
Yeah.
And it was in Borders Books. It sold about, I don't know, maybe 40,000 copies. So it did pretty good.
40,000 copies?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is.
I mean, overall, over the years. But my dream was to get it made into a movie, but no, that never happened.
Steve and Greg, I mean, one thing great about this is I come in there, and you've got your favorite spot in the restaurant. You kind of sit there, and you write. A lot of times you're in the booth. I don't even have it's not like a pump room booth. Do you have
booth
a name
one,
for it?
Yeah,
booth one?
Yeah.
And you'll sit there and write.
Oh, yeah.
I think that's really interesting.
Yeah.
And do you find, do characters come through the doors that you're in, for future
work? Not lately, no. But I finished a play just recently.
Yeah.
I'm hoping to get that produced pretty soon.
And did you write that at the restaurant?
Yeah.
We'll talk about that in a minute. Plantation?
Plant Nation,
yeah. And I didn't know this. Is your father a Chicago cop?
Yeah, he was, yeah.
He was?
Yeah.
Because that's the other thing. Your place is very cop-friendly.
Oh, yeah.
I always see cops in there.
Yeah, we used to have a lot of cops. But when they closed the 12th District over there, or was it 13? The 13th district, yeah. They kind of dispersed, so we don't get as many.
Where was your dad at?
He was the 14th district. It was Austin.
Uh-huh.
Around like Chicago and Laramie, around there. Okay. That was like an old station. They built one since then, a new one.
Now, how'd you find Casey?
just pure luck, you know. No, well, you know Jenny. Remember Jenny?
Yeah,
worked
right.
There for like 10 years, uh-huh. And she was great. But she retired. She moved to Berwyn. So we put an ad in the Craigslist for a waitress wanted. And we got a lot of, like, emails and resumes from people calling, but nobody just fit the bill until Casey came along.
What do you look for in a server?
Experience.
Yeah.
Yeah, I put that right in there. We need somebody with some breakfast experience. And when I first talked to her on the phone, I said, do you have experience? And she goes, well, I got like 35 years experience.
Your capacity there is what, about 45, 46?
46,
46.
Yeah.
So is turnover important? Do you have to get people in and out of there?
Yeah, but we've got like a back room we could always open up. And we always have seating available.
Yeah. So Casey, how you doing?
Good.
So what's interesting about your story, I'm going to say, you told me you're 50 years old.
I'll be 50 years old, yeah, next
And you
week.
Started waitressing at 14?
Yes.
So tell us the journey.
The journey, I come of six kids. I'm one out of six. I'm in the middle. I lived on Southport and Grace around Music Box Theater all my life. Grew up there all my life. The Augustinos on Addison and Southport. I have two older sisters, and they start making salads there and waitressing a little bit. So I snuck right in. And ever since then, I've been going, running.
What'd your parents do?
My father actually worked for Echo. He was a foreman at Echo. And my mother stayed at home. She had six kids. PTA mom, made our clothes, sold curtains for school. Bake sale, all of it.
So, really, you've been doing it from 14 to age 15.
Yeah.
You told me the other day, I was taking some notes, you did the Golden Nugget at Sayers and Irving.
Yes.
Sanders and Skokie, I've never been there.
Sanders and Skokie's good. It's run by a couple, father and son, they're Greeks. They've been running it like for over 30 years now. Couple of good guys. They have good food. They got the old coffee. You get your dessert. You get a little everything, you know, for one set price. So they get a good crowd in there, actually.
Hollywood Grill. Everybody knows that place.
Hollywood
right?
Grill, yeah.
Rodman used to go in there, yeah.
I manage that overnight. And you talk about characters. I could probably write a couple books and have like 1,000 characters for you.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's fun. You learn a lot overnight.
It's there in Wicker Park. What is it? Ashland and...
North
Ashland
Avenue,
and North, yeah. Right. And it's open 24 hours.
Right.
And was that your stop before the sunrise?
I worked the White Palace. I retired
from the White Palace.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Because the same owner. So,
George. Yeah. George was, yeah.
Yeah. The Greek name we can't pronounce.
Yeah, right.
But, yeah, I found Marty. Actually, I got sick of waitressing. The industry itself, I'm sorry, it's hard to find good help, and it's really hard to work with people that aren't capable of doing the job. And everybody thinks they can do the job, and it might look easy, but it's not. Not, you know, if you want to make money. So I've raised five kids doing this.
You have.
But I never get, I'm not a social girl. I don't get on media. On Craigslist, that was my second time on it. I'm browsing through it, laying on my bed. The only reason Marty got a call is because he had a phone number instead of email, because I don't have email. So I called and left a message, never thinking I'd get a call back. Excuse me. He calls me back about maybe an hour and a half later, and I'm like, hey, I know this number, right? Because that's my last number I dialed out. And I was shocked he called me back. I think the next day or a couple days later I went in, and they were interviewing somebody else. And they actually let her work there a week and found out that she wasn't the one and called me in. So,
I was thinking about this, are there still lifers? Are there still lifers out there?
Yeah, but it's really hard for them to get a job now. Like, some of the restaurants that they worked in either closed down, you know. I've known waitresses that's been doing it for 32 years, 25 years, a lot of them. And now they're either getting older and they just can't do it no more, they retire. But these kids ain't out here for life. I didn't ever think I'd do it for life. But to be honest with you, it's a good living if you know what you're doing.
Yeah.
It really is. It's cash money. I mean, you got to claim whatever, but... I tried 8 hours in an office building down here, and I couldn't do it.
I didn't know you. Office. You've raised five kids doing this.
And I have 13 grandchildren now. Yes.
Wow. Holy mackerel. We're going to come back and talk a little bit more of the Sunrise Cafe, and then we'll get into Gibson's after this on WGN. Welcome back to Nocturnal Journal on WGN 720. We're talking about the Sunrise Cafe, 2012 West Chicago Avenue, and joining the conversation is Steve Lombardo, co-owner of Gibson's. Right, Steve?
Correct.
And Greg Horan, director of operations at Gibson's.
Correct. Yes.
Have you guys ever been to the Sunrise?
You know, I was we were talking earlier, and I've got a good friend who's there all the time, and he's been encouraging me to go, and I haven't yet.
The Sunrise, really?
I will now. Yeah,
come visit us.
That's his, it's his favorite spot. So,
it's like, did you guys have? It's on my list of questions. Good breakfast spots down by the neighborhood where you're at, down by Gibson's. Are they still around? I mean, like a good, you know.
Well, it's such a popular thing on the weekends, especially. Yeah, we started serving breakfast at some of our places, as a matter of fact. Saturdays and Sundays are very popular in the city for breakfast. So a lot of bars are doing it now, and some of them do it very well.
Yeah. Back in the day, you started when, in 89 there?
89.
Were there like corner breakfast places then? Like,
well, there diners? Used to be. I mean, on that street, there was O'Connell's a long right. time ago, which was a famous one. And there was Mammy's was there, but they're all gone now.
All gone.
The only old-time place that's left, and it's, you know, it's a chain, it's a little different, is the Pancake House.
Right.
That's the only one. But they were all those, they're basically Greek diners. There was was the one in the Maryland Hotel that was a famous old Yvette's, or what was the
name?
Yeah,
I can't think of it, but yeah.
It was great, yeah.
Still lines outside the Pancake House.
Oh, yeah, the Pancake House still does good. But they had the Pump Room, had a great breakfast spot in on the lower level. Yeah, there were a lot of them, but they're gone.
Is that because, well, I know real estate, but it's also rent, residential, right? Too? I mean,
well, it's the rent. Yeah, you can't afford the rent with a breakfast place. So, as Greg said, the bars are now doing it on the weekends. And I think the Pancake, well, Pancake House and Temple, I think, are the two that are left.
Yeah, Marty, that's a question. Interesting. How many of your clients, your customers, are from the immediate neighborhood? I mean, just walk over or take a short drive over?
Probably 90%. Yeah, we get a lot of local people.
Yeah. And what are the specialties there? I've never had them. I don't think I've ever had them. The smoky mountain eggs, you're proud of those?
You never had that?
I don't think I'd maybe once.
That's biscuits and gravy with eggs and bacon on top of it. Yeah.
You guys created that?
Yeah.
Tell us what's on that.
We have biscuits and gravy, which is a specialty. And I thought, well, let's like spruce it up a little bit. So I figured, well, we'll just take some eggs on the side. But then I figured, well, let's put them on top, you know, and then put some bacon on top of that. And it looked like a little mountain. So we just said, well, let's call it the Smoky Mountain Eggs. You know, it kind of caught on.
It's such a homespun pace. Casey, what do you talk, like when you have a new server come in, do you call them servers or waitresses? What's the correct?
I probably call them a server.
Yeah.
I think
waitress
is an old term because there's so many more, you know, males into the industry now. And there's actually some, excuse me, restaurants.
Want some water?
Thanks. Yeah.
Sure, leave me a nice tip for that.
Okay. They only have male servers, you know, they don't have female.
Yeah.
So now the industry, though, is filled, infiltrated. And I used to train waitresses. But now 20-year-olds know everything. You know, at 20, I don't remember thinking I knew everything with the attitude. The attitude is bad in the industry. That's why it's hard for an old girl like me to get back into, like, a bar downtown, you know, or a place downtown, because everybody knows everything, you know. And I know what I know. So.
What do you do with crabby customers? Like, I've come in there crabby sometimes and stuff, but when I don't have my coffee.
I've been doing this for so long. I think I have a lot of tricks, and I think you adapt yourself. That's how you make money. That's how you've been in this industry for so long. You have to adapt to that customer. And you could be a crab ass, but it doesn't mean I was going to say it to your face. I'm just going to learn to deal with you in your own little way, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Dave knows about it. I remember the first time meeting Dave, it was in another restaurant. And he came in, and everybody knows Dave there. It was like being in Cheers. Hi, Dave. I didn't know who Dave was. I just knew he came in. He looked around, and he wanted somebody there right now. Dave's got to go. As soon as Dave comes in, Dave has got to go. So I remember this one server that did it. She was new, and she didn't know Dave. And got to know Dave really quick because Dave left. So she didn't get to know Dave. She didn't do too long.
I don't remember that.
And I was sort of worried about him not coming back in. But they're like, no, that's Dave. He just goes when he has to go. Don't be offended. You know, don't worry. He'll be back. And he was. I'm sure she never waited on you again, though, because you're particular with some something.
I can be. I can. Yeah, that's my next question is, do you have any special orders? Anybody throwing you real curveballs there?
No,
I know people are, we were getting into this a little bit too. I mean, people don't eat meat. People want this that way and stuff. Do you?
Well, nowadays, I think there's so many choices out there of restaurants that people know if they're vegans or certain places they could go to. We do have soy sausage. We have some products. And the neighborhood knows that, and people are pretty good. We don't get too many customers that are, hard, not even with attitudes. I think in the past there was. But not nowadays. They're pretty laid back, the kids that come in by us.
Yeah. And weekends are busier. I mean, how is the crowd different between weekend and during the week?
Well, the weekends, we get more families coming in and a lot of regulars. And then, we have sets of regulars for the weekend and sets of regulars for weekdays. And weekdays are, they're a lot slower, but...
weekdays, we got the working guy come in.
I see that.
A lot of regular working guys come in. And on the weekend, we got a lot of kids in the neighborhood, and their mothers and fathers come up to see them. So we have a lot of that as far as family.
Yeah.
And people that raise their kids there, So we have a nice little crowd.
You guys want to hang around a little bit? We're going to flip it over to Gibson's. Do you have anywhere to go? Are you working tomorrow, Casey?
No.
Okay.
Yeah, we can hang around.
Yeah, all right. Okay, we're going to be back, and we're going to talk about Gibson's on Rush Street after David Jennings on the news on WGN.
Just a gigolo everywhere you go. People know the part you're playing. Paid for every dance.
Welcome back to Nocturnal Journal on WGN 720. That's Sarah Vaughn live at Mr. Kelly's.
Every night
1028 North Rush, site now of Gibson's, and we've got Steve Lombardo, Gibson's co-owner, and Greg Horan, director of operations, and sitting in with us is Casey Curtis, server from Sunrise Cafe, and owner Marty Cam. So tell us, you guys, just for someone who's listening for the first time, the history. Gibson's is probably the most famous steakhouse in the Midwest.
We hope so.
Yeah. Top grossing restaurant?
Yes, it is.
Independent restaurant in Chicago?
Yes, it is.
Okay. So how did it all begin?
Well, Rush Street.
This is Steve, yeah.
Rush Street was traditionally an entertainment area, and in the past it had many famous restaurants and nightclubs. And Gibson's was Mr. Kelly's. And what happened during the 80s, Rush Street really fell on hard times. And everything closed. There was nothing there. There was a famous nightclub, Faces, that closed, and Harry's Cafe was that. So what happened was we had control of the Mr. Kelly site, and Mayor Daley was looking like he was going to be elected, and we had a lot of faith that he was going to do things to turn the city around. So we actually opened right with him. He took office in April, and we opened Gibson's in May.
We being?
Myself, my partner, Hugo Rally. And you.
And had you had restaurants before that?
Yeah, we had a nightclub on Division called the BBC. Okay. In that location, we had a restaurant called Sweetwater.
Sweetwater. I had been to Sweetwater.
Had been Sweetwater.
I'd never been to Mr. Kelly's, but I had been to Sweetwater.
So Mr. Kelly's was from Mr. Kelly's. You could walk in and see Bette Midler and buy a drink for $2.
Yeah. Bill Cosby. I mean, you've been on the show before, but I only ever asked you, did you grow up around here?
Well, I mean, I grew up in Park Ridge, which is in Chicagoland area.
Yeah. Yeah. So, what was your early memories of that neighborhood, just entertainment wise and stuff?
Well, when we were in high school, things were different then. Yeah. So you could, in our era, as a young person, you could go to all these clubs and so forth, and every prom, every big dance, that's where we go. Mr. Kelly's or the London House,
Yeah. Mr. Kelly's closed in '75.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Did you guys ever go down to
no.
Sweetwater?
Not
or
Mr. Kelly's. Not, BBC, though.
You did go to BBC,
yeah,
Marty?
Yeah.
When you, yeah, okay.
Oh, yeah.
BBC was a fun place.
Oh, BBC was that. Marty, how old are you? You look too young to have gone to the BBC.
It closed.
Well, I got out of it in right around '79.
I was there.
It was open longer than that, but
it was like it had to be like 75 or 76 because I remember. No offense, but we got to get home in time for Saturday Night Live. I remember thinking that. You know, yeah. That's when John Belushi and Dan Aykroyd were doing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, they were there. In fact, John Belushi was at the BBC and Sweetwater, both places.
Yeah. Really? Yeah. Wow. Now, it was a struggle. I mean, the stuff I've read, I mean, you didn't make any money the first two or three years. When did things start picking up for you there?
Well, it really coincided with, as the mayor brought Chicago back and started planting trees and people were feeling safer to walk around on the streets and so forth. So it really grew with him. And then people started opening up. Carmine's opened up and Tavern on Rush opened up, and you know, little by little, the hotel was built across the street. So it took, it was probably the first 5 years was the time where it was still sort of edgy, but then it got better and better. And the big thing is that it was like the when we opened, it was like the wrong pew in the right church. I mean, the demographics around there were so great that you knew that it had to get better, and the mayor just did everything to make it better, you know.
Why is it called Gibson's? Did I ever ask that question?
There's a friend of mine, John Gibson, who was the quintessential, I mean, he worked for the Convention Bureau, and he was, when I told him we were going to open a steakhouse, he was kiddingly, he put in the Convention Bureau news that we were opening a steakhouse called Gibson's. And when we were putting the restaurant together, my partner and I, we were looking for a signature drink. And at that time, nobody was drinking martinis. And we decided to give this big 5 ounce martini and call it a Gibson. And then we were a little nervous that it was going to be too masculine. So we got some prints from Dana Gibson and the Gibson girls. We hung those up there. And then we had John Gibson. So it's not possessive. It's plural. It's for all, like, you know, toast to all the Gibsons in the world.
Right. Yeah. I don't think I knew that story.
Yeah.
That's good. So you became you did become known for your martinis and your steaks. Talk about that.
Well, the martinis, as I said, nobody was drinking them at the time, but we were giving such a big martini, everyone started coming in and getting a glass of ice on the side and making two vodka on the rocks out of the one martini. So that's really how they got famous, because of the value situation. And the steaks, Stockyards Packing still is, and at the time it was the premier nationally. They were the gourmet steak purveyor in America. And Harry Katz, who owned the company, was a friend of mine. And he lived right down the street. He lived to Carlisle on Lakeshore and Bellevue. And so he took it on as his personal project. So he used Gibson's as his sales point. So he'd sell guys from all over the country. He'd bring them in and he'd take them to dinner at Gibson's. So he actually brought all the steak. He told us, I mean, I knew nothing about steaks. Harry just did it all for us. Eventually we learned. He taught us the business. But he would always give us the best. He was the best, and he gave us the best of what he had, you know, so.
USDA Gibson's Prime Angus Beef.
Well, since then, after we learned about beef and so on and so forth, finally we discovered what was the best beef in America, and it's beef raised in the upper Midwest and fed in a certain way and so forth. So we were able to identify that, and then we went to the U.S. government and got our own spec rating, so that, and then we got the slaughterhouses that we use talked in to grading for that spec. The slaughterhouses are there. The government inspectors grade all the meat, and so, but they have to agree to issue that spec to the government officials. So we got that all done, and I think we're the only ones with the only restaurant with its own. Own meat.
That's what I've heard. Yeah. You guys, for our other panelists, do you still see interest in meat? People still order like a lot of bacon and stuff?
Oh, yeah. Bacon has to be the number one seller. Bacon's always. Yeah. I'll try to talk people into something else, but they want their bacon. So.
Yeah. In fact, we have a...
I want my bacon right now.
Yeah.
But we have another restaurant right there, right across the street, called Lux Bar, which is a restaurant bar, and it's one of those bars that does breakfast every weekend, brunch and breakfast. And we've got actual pork belly that we buy and we cut into those thick slabs of bacon in it. It's delicious.
It's interesting. I don't know. You know, I don't know. I mean, you hear people. I hear a lot of vegetarianism, but then you hear a lot of steakhouses opening up. And I mean, Swift and Sons opened up, and so people are eating
Swift
meat.
And Sons opened up. GT Prime. It's still a very, very popular genre in Chicago. For sure.
Yeah. Prime and Provision.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Chicago Cut. I mean, you can go on and on. The steakhouses are opening.
Yeah.
Still going.
How did Gibson's become such a celebrity magnet? I mean, we talked about Rodman. I know he was there. I mean, everybody's been there.
One name, Irv Cup's in it.
Irv, really? Yeah. Really? Really? Yeah. And Stella?
Yeah.
I want to get Stella on the show.
But they were there every night.
Really?
Yeah, because, well, the pump room had died, and he didn't have anywhere to go, so he chose Gibson's to be his spot, you know. So he was there every night, and a lot of celebrities came in because of him, or anyone who came in, he reported on him the next day, you know.
Wow.
And then after that, we were lucky enough to get, you know, the Michael Jordans and the Rodmans with the Bulls playoff run, exceptional, and every celebrity that was in town for the Bulls games was at our place afterwards.
Yeah.
What happened was, I don't know how the superstition started, but Michael Jordan believed that he had to eat at Gibson's after every home game. So what he would do is he used to take the whole team and make them work out after the game. So they'd play a game, they'd win naturally. Then he'd take them into the workout room. They'd all press weights for about 2 hours. At about 12:30, 1 o'clock, they'd start showing up at Gibson's, and they were there. So they were there a minimum of 40 times a year just after the game. So we'd have people getting reservations at midnight and wait for tables at 1 in the morning. You know?
And people left them alone, right? Nobody bothered them.
No, I mean, pretty much. But the other team would come. Then the other team started coming because they knew they were there, you know. So, no, people pretty much, I think so. We've got a policy. If you're in the bar, you're free game. But if you're in the restaurant, we don't let anybody approach
For the most part, it was a little bit difficult with Jordan sometimes because he was transcendent, you know. Yeah.
He was very gracious, you know,
yeah.
So
always,
yeah, yeah. Are there any celebrities there? Actually, I wanted to ask you. I don't know if you have a count. I've been there. I mean, how many celebrity pictures do you have up in the hallway? And I mean, hundreds.
There's hundreds up. We probably have way over 1,000, and we can't put them all up because we don't have enough room.
I always wondered how that worked. I did a story one time on Tom Dreesen where I think he carried around his own celebrity pictures. Do they send them to you later?
No, you know, here's a cute story. Jack Nicholson, okay, is in there and he's shooting Hoffa. So he's staying at the Ritz, right? One of the hotels, and he's there a lot. So he's there a lot. And Kathy, in fact, they had another cute one too. But Kathy said to him, she said, you know, because we don't allow anybody to ask for pictures or bother him or do anything like that. So Kathy says, you know, she said, Mr. Nicholson, I'm not supposed to do this, but you know, you've been here, you know, so many times and you're so gracious. Would you give us a picture, maybe an autographed picture, you know? And he said, sure, Kathy, no, you know, no problem. And he's leaving. So he's back 10 minutes later with the picture, you know? So Kathy's like really embarrassed, and Kathy is Kathy O'Malley, yeah, who's right. been with us since day one.
She used to be at, I think, Rittenberg, too. She used to be at Faces?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, right. Yeah.
So she's embarrassed, and she says, I didn't expect you to run and get the picture and bring it back. And he said, we all need as much PR and publicity as we can get. He said, now I went out of my way. I brought that picture back. He said, I'm going to be here tomorrow night. And he pointed to some guy in the wall, and he said, get rid of that guy. I want to be right there. The next day, she had his picture up there. But she did another cute one. Billy Joel was there. So so he's eating. And at the time, there was a record store still existed. There was one across the street. So she told one of the busboys, go over and buy a Billy Joel album. We'll have it autograph it, and we can frame it to put on the wall, you know. So the kid goes over there, and they were running a special, and they had a full, not a full set, but like three-quarter size cutout of Billy Joel, you know, on a stand. So the kid brings the thing back. So Kathy goes up, and she says, you know, Mr. Joel, I'm not supposed to do this. She said, but I'm like your biggest fan. She said, and I keep a picture of you on my desk. She said, and you know, if you would sign it, she said, it would just mean the whole world to me. So, yeah, you know, bring it over. So she brings over this poster. So he knew that she was busted. So he said, okay, he said, Kath, I'll sign. He said, but I want to smoke a cigar. And, you know, there's nobody. She said, well, you can't smoke in the restaurant. She said, at the time, you could smoke in the bar. She said, but I'll have a table waiting for you in the bar when you get done with dinner so you can have your cigar, and it'll be there, and it'll be right next to the piano, and you got to play. So he went in the bar, and he played with our piano player for about a half hour.
Did he really?
Yeah, it was very nice.
How long ago was that?
That was a long time ago. It was probably 18. But he had his birthday party. He had his, I guess his 60th, I know. It might have been his 60th birthday party. And he had it at Gibson's, and he had a big crowd. And he played for probably upstairs, and it was a private party. But there was about 50 people there. And he played for, it was over an hour, and he strictly did Beatles tunes, and it was all a Beatles sing-along. And it was really great.
Wow. We got to take a break here for some spots. We're going to be back and talk about Gibson's and celebrities at the Sunrise Cafe after this on WGN. Welcome back to Nocturnal Journal on WGN 720. We're talking about Gibson's and the Sunrise Cafe. This is going all right, right, Dan? It's pretty seamless. Yeah, both worlds going back and forth. So Greg Horan, Director of Operations at Gibson's. Talk about, we were just talking off the air, about some of the growth that you guys are doing. I've spent some time at the Hugo's in Naperville, and I know you've done well in Oak Brook. So talk about Gibson's profile.
Well, I guess our second restaurant, I joined the company in 1996. There was just Gibson's. And then in April of 97, we took over the location next door that had been the Hamburger Hamlet and did the Hugo's Frog Bar and Fish House, which was our seafood answer to the Gibson's Steakhouse. The next after that, we did Gibson's in Rosemont in 2000, which was hearkening back to Steve's nickel bag roots, I think, because that the nickel bag was 1 mile down the block, and we've got a great spot right across from the convention center in Rosemont. It turned out to be an excellent spot.
Yeah, it's doing well.
And then 2004, we opened up in Naperville, which was our furthest foray to that time. Kind of a smaller spot for us in a more retail kind of a setting. It's turned out fantastic.
The Naperville thing, when I was at the Sun-Times, we did a big story on that. I grew up in Naperville, and for a while, there was just a flurry of Chicago restaurants opening. Mm-hmm. I know Heaven on 7 is still there.
There's still a whole bunch. There's a whole bunch of development in downtown Naperville. They've opened about 6 new restaurants in the past year. So it's still a great spot. It's, you know, that downtown area is very busy. Naperville is sprawling. It's very, very big, but there's 100,000 people, and the downtown is still the epicenter. So
Yeah. Now you're going to expand River Point, the River Point building in the fall.
Yes.
Tell us about that.
Yes, we have new restaurant there. Well, with all the new steakhouse opening up, we are doing our own modern interpretation of the steakhouse. We're also going to have some Italian flair. Our chef is our chef from Cortino, John Coletta, is crafting the menu. So it'll be some great steaks from Gibson's and around the world. We're going to do some Japanese Kobe, some Australian beef as well. And the menu will also have a definite Italian and European influence as well.
First new downtown restaurant for the group in 12 years?
Is it 12 years? Yeah.
Something like that. Yeah.
Luxmire.
Is it true?
Yeah.
Give me a little of what it's going to look like. This is just stuff I've heard.
I've got to hand this off to Steve.
Retractable roof, three stories. I mean, what can people expect? Steve?
What it is, it's a... A brand new office building, which is really fantastic, but it's built over the Northwestern railroad tracks going north out of Northwestern Station. So there's a park. There's a big park in front of it. It's right on the river, on the west side of the river, looking east straight down the river.
Right where the river kind of takes a bend. We're looking back straight east.
Yeah, we're looking straight east where it goes north and south. And what we have is adjacent and part of and connected to this high rise is a four-story building that sits out on the park. So the bar level is the first level, and there's a big outdoor area on the park. And then the next level up is the entrance level is on the first level. So the bar is the second level, which is actually the park level. And then the next level is the dining room with a big outdoor deck that seats about 80. And then the top level is a lounge that is all glass with the walls come apart and the roof comes off it, and it's it's really beautiful, really beautiful. Really? And it's that mid-century modern.
That's great.
The building is like an international design, and this is kind of an international design, but it harkens back to the mid-century, to the 50s.
And that'll be, you expect the fall for that too?
What?
Autumn opening?
Hopefully September. Yeah, September. Just after Labor Day.
In the fall, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Marty, we're going around the table here. Marty, any expansion plans? When is your back, is the patio open yet?
Our back room, it's open.
As a solo diner, Casey, I never want to take up any space back there, right? I don't want to. How many seats do you have in the back?
About 20, something like that, yeah. It's just on the weekends we use that.
Oh, just on the weekends?
Yeah.
Unless I get a big crowd, then I'll open the back room.
And I wanted to plug, is your play done?
Yeah.
Tell us real quick about the play.
Okay. It's an original play. It's called Plant Nation. And it's a hypothetical story about what would happen if a slave owner from Civil War kept his slaves for 100 years. And that's basically the premise of it. And
it takes place in two periods, 1863 and 1963?
Well, yeah. The opening scene is 1863. It's just the first scene. And then it flash forwards to 1963. And two young guys, it's sort of like an island plantation. They escape, and they just happen to meet a family who happens to be going to the big freedom rally in Washington, D.C., and they end up meeting Martin Luther King, and it's like a black comedy, literally.
And you wrote that there, though. You write that. You do all your writing at the restaurant.
Yeah, I get a lot of spare time during the week. Yeah. So it's a hobby. I write then. And actually, I'm hoping to get this produced within, this year sometime.
Well, you did well with your books. 40,000, that's good.
Yeah, well, that was a nice
yeah. You did two volumes of The Boarding House, right?
There was a sequel, yeah.
Yeah, right, yeah.
Mrs. Shoemaker and the Mayor's Race.
And Casey, what's going on with you? When are you there? I mean, you're there during the week, or are you there on Saturday?
Yeah, during the week, 5 days a week, and then I gave up the weekends because, I don't need to work that much. So every other Sunday.
So every other
or
Sunday?
When they need me, yeah.
And what time does your shift start?
7 o'clock. 7 to 3 every day.
7 to 3 every day.
Yes.
Do you eat there?
Yeah.
You don't go across the street to McDonald's.
No, you got to come try the chilaquiles. About our chilaquiles.
Is that, yeah.
Yeah, no one would ever think that. But when I first started there, I couldn't get over. I'm like, this little place. And then I realize it's a sauce, So everybody comes for that, the Smoky Mountain. It's a nice little place.
I always wanted her on the show. I just love, she's got a Chicago voice, kind of a Chicago attitude. You grew up right by the Music Box, right?
Yeah, yes. I went to Blaine School. I went to Lakeview High School.
And we got 1 minute. Tell me about being with the VFW Brigades.
The VFW, my grandfather was a war veteran. And we got involved at a young age and he used to take us around. But I used to do the parades and Memorial Labor Days. I used to be the rifle girl. I used to be the lead, It was fun. We used to march to the cemeteries, and have to stay for all of that. But it's good. I did a lot of senior citizen stuff, go around, visit homes, entertain them.
Good
it was
for
fun
you.
Growing up.
Well, thanks, you guys. I think this worked out
thank
okay.
You.
Right?
Yeah,
right?
Thank you,
thanks
so,
for having
thanks
us.
A lot. Yeah, thanks to Casey Curtis, Marty Kam, Greg Horan, and Steve Lombardo, co-owners of Gibson's. And we may be back next week. We'll see how the Hawks do on Nocturnal Journal.
Thanks for having us, Dave.